think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you tend to say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 253 of Low Limit Football on this 9th of September 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, as we get set to kick off year 7 of this podcast, we see racism is alive and well in Europe as another Italian side commits a complete faceplant in defense of their player. A huge upset in European qualifications as the Netherlands comes back with 4 second-half goals to defeat Germany in qualification. And the injury bug strikes Real Madrid again. We'll let you know who is out as we chat with our special guest from La Liga TV, Surma Hunter, who will join us in just a little bit. Let me get my co-host in here to start year 7, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my man?
Very well, Joe. I mean, just one big question, an important question that just rose off my mind over the weekend. Do you think Dorian ever hit Alabama?
Yeah, with a magic marker. That is brutal. You know, it's just fake news, right? Fake news?
No, alternative facts, remember?
Alternative facts, I guess. That's depends on who's spinning the news in this country. But we're still in year 3 of this rock and roller coaster, and we'll see.
And apparently, the same happening in one of our topics that we'll be talking about today.
That's year 3 that's another roller coaster. We'll get into that one in a little bit, because that one gets me fired up. You just sent me the meme of the dogs in the room with the burning fire. I'm more like the dog in the burning room. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's do some trivia. Why don't we start out with some trivia? We'll do some opening thoughts, and then we'll get to it. So I've got trivia tonight, all right? And I've got an easy one. This is a simple one. I'm going to ask you, it's like a three-part question. When was the last time the United States beat Mexico in an important match? Okay, so not a friendly. When was the last time the U.S. beat Mexico? If you can give me the date, the location, and the score.
Important match, meaning World Cup qualifier or anything.
Gold Cup final, you know, anything along those lines. You know, something that was not a friendly.
Okay, I think I got it.
Awesome.
I think I got it.
All right, we'll give you the answer in a little bit. So let's talk about opening thoughts tonight. And opening thoughts tonight, I mean, as much as you and I would like to hammer the U.S., we'll hammer them a little later on, because I think the racism thing is definitely got to be opening thoughts tonight. Enters Romelu Lukaku at Cagliari. Lines up, take a penalty kick. Audible monkey chants coming from the Cagliari faithful. This is the same group, by the way, that the year before had monkey chants against Moise Keane. Do you remember? And then obviously Leo Benucci.
Even a year ago. It's been almost a few months ago.
Yeah, true. Last season. But then Leo Benucci with the face palm in his defense. Max Allegri with the face palm in his defense. So Romelu Lukaku is subject to racism from the same category of fans, the same fans that really were not punished for what they did, which is disgusting on the FIGC part. And then you get the ultimate of face palms. You get the Inter Ultras saying that you just don't understand. That's we're when we do monkey chants against you, it's to get you off your game because we're not really racist. We're just rooting for our team. You have got to be joking. You've got to be joking that this was actually allowed to be published. This is real. I mean, Rob, jump in because I'm going to start swearing. I mean, where?
That's okay. That's okay. If you swear in Italian, we won't get fined by the FCC.
You know, but the insanity of the insanity on one level of using racist chants to try and quote unquote throw somebody off their game as they're lining up a penalty is one thing. And it's disgusting, and there's no place for it in any sport. I don't care if we're talking soccer, football, cricket, basketball, hockey, underwater tackle checkers. I don't care. Okay, there's absolutely zero place for it in racism. But to come out and write a letter that basically defended the behavior of the Cagliari fans who were racist in mocking your player, your new signing, your prize signing, shame on you. It's beyond idiotic. Nima Tavile, by the way, had a great thread on Twitter of, you know, breaking this whole statement down. And Nima's an Inter guy, right? And even he was like, this is dumb. This is just, there is a village missing all of their idiots right now. And they are all the guys that penned this letter. It was bad. I mean, what was your reaction to all of this? And really, you know, I know this is a problem around Europe. But, man, if Italy's not leading the line, I don't know who is.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been interesting to see how Italy is leading the line. And, you know, as an Italian yourself, Joe, you know this much better than I do.
And when I say this, leading in a bad way, not leading in a good way, not trying to fix this or tackle the problem, just totally turning a complete blind eye towards this problem and allowing it to continue. Okay, and I want to talk about how we fix it. I do want to get into that before we talk to Serma. So, or Semra, let me get your thoughts on everything first, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess I'm echoing probably the entire world with a few village idiots that probably think that this was great to see that this is unacceptable. The fact that in 2019, such racism is still existing in an environment where, you know, it's more open to footballers of all races, of all colors, Inter, ironically, with their nickname, they're called Internazionale. But, you know, that's literally their full name. And they chose that because, you know, they're brothers of the world. You're not exactly brothers of the world if you're exactly demonstrating and supporting such ridiculous claims that is still unfortunately unacceptable. I mean, what's next? I mean, we are going to continue to see this. And, you know, we're seeing not just here in Italy as well. We're seeing in England with sorts of social media and how players are reacting to that. You know, we see things in Spain. We see things in France where games were ended, which is a good thing. But I don't think that's the solution anymore. I think you have to go, as badly as this may seem, you have to go a bit more radical. I mean, you know, and this is now we're going into what can we do to solve such a thing. People want to say to pick out the fans and see what they're going to do and ban them. But I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that solves everything. I feel like there has to be much more. Deducting points, well, that's only just going to make things worse for the entire team because of a few stupid fans, which is totally understandable.
I
but it's not all of them. But then you have the more radical approach. You have, and I think this is what will matter. This is what I personally think.
Mm-hmm.
I think if once sponsors and people that bring in the money to Syria for not just the entire country, but for a worldwide basis, continue to see such these things, where I'm assuming the upper management is thinking, you know, why are we going to continue to support such a thing and give money to the league and, you know, getting it vice versa if such things are going completely against what we believe in?
Right.
I think once that happens, I think once those that are making the money, because I think that's effectively how, you know, everything is going to be run in. I think once that is taken away, that's where you see some change. Because eventually, you know, without the money, you can't do money. You can't do much.
Right.
You can't do much.
Right. So I agree with you. I agree that the punishment should be twofold. One, that type of punishment that you're talking about is not something that the league can make, right? That's not a decision the league can make where they say, you know, they go to Inter and let's say we're going to take Pirelli off your shirts and you can't have the Pirelli money anymore, right? I mean, that just that part can't happen. That's something Pirelli has to make a decision on. And I don't know who Cagliari's shirt sponsor is right now, but that's a decision that they should make. Now, I guess as we as fans can affect that by saying to these people, writing letters to these people, whoever they are, let's say it's GE, but I don't know. So whoever the sponsor is, and I guess maybe I should just be feverishly looking up Cagliari's shirt sponsor.
I got it.
All right, thank you. So I want to single out the right group. But when that shirt sponsor, you know, they won't sit there and go, you know what, Cagliari, we're taking our money back. Or at least it doesn't seem like they would do that. You would expect them to do something like that now that they've had multiple offenses here. But, you know, they won't do that. So what do you do? As a fan, you've got to go and say, you know what, Company X, you're sponsoring Cagliari's shirt and they sponsor racism or they support racism because they're not doing anything about it. So from that standpoint, I can't bother with you anymore. So it's Bira Ignusa, Bira Ignusa. Okay, well that's the sponsor for Cagliari's shirt. Thank you, Rob, for finding that. And you know, so now, okay, so don't drink the beer, right? Don't buy the beer. Don't drink the beer. Okay, and then be done with it. Now, once they see that that's happening, then they say, okay, Cagliari, you guys are screwing up. We're going to pull our money. Then we see that change enacted on the financial level, okay? But I think you have to look at the FIGC here and say, hey, you guys got to do something. You know, one thing, Cagliari's responsible to police their fans. And I know people say, oh, well, then Inter will plant fans. No, you guys know, you people know who's sitting where. You have supporter sections and how people get tickets. So you know who is sitting where. And even then, you know, it's kind of the mob mentality where if you find this person that's being the racist, right, single him out. This is the guy yelling. Pull him out. Ban him for life. Okay? I think if it continues, then the FIGC or the Federation, the Premier League or League Owner, whoever, needs to step in and go, we're deducting points, okay? We're deducting 3 points for every time this happens that it's proven that it was your fan base because you're responsible to police the stadiums. You're responsible for that stuff. So do a better job, okay? Otherwise, you know, playing behind closed doors and educating the fans, that's ridiculous. That goes nowhere. It's happened at Juventus. That still happens. It's a joke, okay? So we're not educating anybody here. You've got to start hitting them in the pocket, like you said, Rob, and hitting them in the points. Going to be one hell of a hit in the pocket, Rob, if Cagliari all of a sudden gets relegated because they may have accumulated 40 points during the Serie A season, but they lost 9 points of it because of racist chants that were proven from the Cagliari fans. So now you got relegated. Talk about that kind of money you're losing, right? Imagine like a Chelsea, right, getting relegated because of racist chants. Think of all the Premier League money they would lose. I think your point is the perfect point, and I think the way to get there is twofold. One, don't use the people that sponsor these teams, and two, hit them in the point totals to the point where you're threatening them for relegation, and then they'll lose their money that way as well. I think that's the way to do it. Some of the excerpts I want to read from the Inter letter, because I think at this point Inter should be fined as well. But some of the excerpts out of the Inter letter to Romelu Lukaku, basically justifying the racism. These are excerpts I'm taking from a CNN story. In Italy, we use some ways only to help our teams and to try to make our opponents nervous, not for racism, but to mess them up. We are a multi-ethnic fans organization, and we have always welcomed players from everywhere. However, we have always used that way, in quotations, with other teams' players in the past, and we probably will in the future. We are not racist, and so are not the Cagliari fans. You have to understand that in all Italian stadiums, people cheer for their teams, but at the same time, they use to cheer against the opponents, not for racism, but to help their own team. Please consider this attitude of Italian fans as a form of respect for the fact that they are afraid of you for their goals you might score against their teams, and not because they hate you or they are racist. It's a load of bull. It's a complete load of bull, in my opinion, Rob. Any final words of wisdom before we move on from this?
No, I mean, I guess I'll get just, you know, one. I guess I'll give you a two-part question. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were in the shoes of a Cagliari fan. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to the games, you have a season ticket and whatnot.
Right.
What would you do? Point. You know, would seeing such things. And number two, why does this continue to happen? Is there? I know it's a big topic that we talked about from a historical standpoint, but if you had to maybe do like a crash course as to why such a thing happens still and why Italy leads it out of all the countries, you know, is there that kind of historical factor?
Yeah, well, one, if I'm a fan and I see some guy doing that and it's open, I go to security and I say, this guy's being a racist. This guy's chanting monkey chants at Romelu Lukaku or whoever it might be. Okay? This is the guy doing it. You know, point it out first and foremost. See something, say something, right? That's the slogan. See something, say something. You see something, say something.
Do you continue to go to the games if such thing happens?
I mean, I do because I've paid for that ticket. You know, me not going to the game is more of a financial punishment to me, isn't it? Because I paid for the ticket and I'm not going. Okay, so that becomes more of a punishment to me. Cagliari already got their money. So I'm not punishing Cagliari by not attending the game if I've already paid for the ticket. I can say in the future I will not pay for tickets, okay? But if I already own the ticket, then that's no punishment to Cagliari, okay? Because they already got their money. The second part, why does it continue to be a problem? I think it's an educational thing. I do think there's a component to that. I think it's something that's rooted. Let's be honest, Rob. You know, racism is not only alive and well in Italy. It's alive and well in this country too, isn't it? You know, we talk about Charlottesville.
Definitely.
Okay. We talk about some of the racist happenings. I mean, obviously we've got gun violence that goes along with it, but you know, some of the racist things that have happened in this country in the past 5 years. Okay. This is not just Italy. This is not just Spain. This is not just England or France. It's the world, okay? We in the United States, you know, to an extent, are just as racist, okay? And sometimes that racism turns into violence. It's not just words. It's actions. So there needs to be – everyone needs to just chill out, okay? Everyone just needs to accept the people that are around them for the fact that they are humans. I love – there's a meme that on the internet of two skeletons, like in an x-ray, kissing, okay? You can't tell from the skeletons if they're black, if they're white, if they're two men, if they're two women, if it's a man and a woman, you know, if one's 60 years old and the other's 30 years old or there's an age discrepancy. You can't tell that from that picture. We've got to start understanding that we need to look at each other as just people, just humans, okay? We're all the same goddamn species, right? Let's break it down to that level. We need to understand that. Are there differences? Yeah, but those differences make us special, okay? Those differences make, and we should celebrate those differences. That's just what we need to do. We can't continue as the human race to discriminate and to segregate and to separate. We're all in this together, people, right? And I think that's where the mentality needs to be. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Romelu Lukaku taking a penalty kick or a gay person trying to get married in a state that doesn't allow it. Okay. I think we need to understand that we're all just people. And I think as human beings, if we start to live by that rule or live by that understanding, then I think we can start to turn the corner and no longer look at Romelu Lukaku as a black soccer player and just look at him as a soccer player, okay, and support him and cheer against him if you're Cagliari, but not because he's black, okay? Say he's got two left feet, I don't know, something, but using the color of his skin to try and throw him off his game is ridiculous, and I don't think it's acceptable by any stretch of the imagination. It's not acceptable in any place at any time anywhere, and that's all I can really say about it, Rob. What about, I mean, let me get your closing thoughts.
No, I mean, look, I have to agree. I mean, we're all human. We're all from the same species. You know, we have two legs, two arms, you know, a brain. I'd be at different forms of intelligence, but, you know, we're all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we have differences, and that makes us special, as you said. But at the same time, yes, as rival fans, you're always looking, and look, you know, the famous one is, you know, saying just like a bunch of jeers or booing or trying to get them off their game. That's fine. But right. Don't use monkey chants, man. That's just ridiculous, and that's just a mentality that unfortunately, you know, cannot be taught at a reasonable level.
And they use black. You know, we always see this against black footballers. When do we see it against the gay footballer? I mean, how many times?
When do we see it with, you know, the Asian or the Latin player?
Oh, that's it. Just remember that they're footballers. Doesn't matter what the color of their skin is. So
exactly.
All right, let's do something a little bit more fun. We had the pleasure, you and I, just before coming on, you know, to record the pod, we had the pleasure of talking to La Liga TV's Semira Hunter. She's a wonderful guest. We had a great interview, so without further ado, we'd like to give you the Semira Hunter interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from La Liga TV, Semira Hunter. Semira, how are you tonight?
Wonderful, thank you very much. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great. Thanks for joining us. I want to kick off because I know you're a host at La Liga TV, which in the United States isn't entirely accessible to us. So we'd like to actually ask you a little bit about yourself and your ties to football.
Sure. Fire away.
Nope. How did you get started in football and then make your way over to La Liga TV?
So this story goes all the way back pretty much to my origins, because as you well know, in the US, football or soccer is the sport for women, and that's where I'm originally from. So mm-hmm. I'm from Los Angeles, and I grew up playing the sport. And I grew up watching the Premier League. I grew up watching all of the World Cups. And actually, it was my lifelong dream to become a professional player. But I was pretty badly injured when I was about 16. And so that pretty much put an end to that dream. And so after a few years of soul searching and trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because I had my goal, my mind set on that for my entire life, I didn't really know what else there was out there for me. So I eventually, it was an idea that came from my mom that she just kind of planted in my head one day. And it was, you know, my parents are very big sports fans. They love American football. They love the NBA. They also love soccer or football. And my mom just kind of said to me, you know, I think you'd be a great sideline reporter. You know, you love the sport. You love to travel. And I think it's perfect for you. And I was like, oh, wow, it was kind of one of the light bulb moments. And I thought, oh, I can't believe I never thought of that before myself. And it was such a great idea that I decided to follow up on it and explore what there was out there, because my undergraduate studies was actually in something completely unrelated. And I was living in Spain at the time. I found a master's program in Madrid, so I moved to Madrid. And I did my master's in Spanish, which really helped my language skills. And it all kind of just took off from there. While I was doing my master's program, I was able to get an internship with Al Jazeera Sport. And I was there for a couple of months at the same time that BN Sports was actually just opening up all around the world. And so the BN Sports office in Miami had contacted me, and they asked me to do some sideline reporting for them. And from there, I went to Real Madrid TV, was there for 2.5 years, and then went to Turkey for 2 years for another sports presenting and correspondent work job. And then I moved back to Spain about 1.5 years ago, and I've been at La Liga TV ever since.
Well, that's...
So that is my life in a nutshell.
That is fantastic. I want to rewind a little bit to go back to when you were a budding footballer.
Sure.
And ask you, obviously, we've had great success with the Women's World Cup this year. We saw some wonderful, wonderful matches and wonderful players, and the world fell in love with many of them. And I would ask you, because many of these players, you know, we don't look at the club situation for many of these players much. We know Lyon is a massive powerhouse. But now we've seen investment from other clubs in Europe, all over Europe, especially in Spain. We've seen a big investment now recently. We've seen Italy. We've seen the England start to turn this around and really present something for women. Mm-hmm. I would ask you, in your heart of hearts right now, where would you want to play your football professionally if given the chance to play at any one of the teams that are currently, you know, have a solid women's team?
That's a good question. I mean, that's tough to say. I mean, in Spain, I would say that maybe the level is not quite as good as, you know, you mentioned some of the French clubs or even the English club, which for women's football has historically been a lot stronger, and obviously the US too. Mm-hmm. So when I was younger, I would have said the US because that's obviously where I grew up and that was what I was familiar with. And it was one of the strongest leagues in the world. And obviously the women always dominated on the world scene as well, winning World Cups and so on. And I went to the World Cup, actually, I think it was in 1999. And the final was at the Rose Bowl in LA. And it was the US against China. And that just left such a huge impact on me that I guess at the time, that's played. Now, I don't feel somewhere here in Spain just because I've been out here for so long and it feels like my new home. And I mean, Atletico Madrid have a really fabulous women's team, and Barcelona as well have a very strong team, and they're getting better all the time. So maybe one of the two of them.
Well, I will go back to the men's side of Atleti in a little bit. I do want to run to the other side of Spain at Real Madrid, and let's start talking about some of the moves they've made this summer. One of them, which was I think it was an expected move in terms of moving Keylor Navas on elsewhere, was bringing Alphonse Areola back from PSG in his place, Navas going to PSG and Areola in return. What are your thoughts of that move, especially from the focus of Alphonse Areola, who seems to be, you know, for lack of a better term, the bridesmaid all the time now? At PSG, he looked like he was going to ascend into that starting position, and then they bring Gigi Buffon in. Now he goes to a team that certainly has a number one in Thibaut Courtois. You know, what from your perspective, what does this mean for Areola, and what do you think of the move for Navas as well, getting out from under Courtois?
Well, it's interesting you use the term like a bridesmaid. I almost feel like Keylor Navas has a similar parallel, doesn't he? Because he's always trying to prove himself time and time again, and it's never seemed to be good enough for Real Madrid. And I actually feel like the way that they've offloaded him, the way they've treated him, the way he was put on a plane last minute some years ago when very nearly at midnight sent to Manchester United in a swap deal with De Gea that didn't work out, and there was lots of tears and emotions involved. And this is a goalkeeper that has won 3 Champions League titles on the bounce. He's not lost a single qualifying match, I think, at all. In 12 matches, I think 0. So he's earned the right, you know, to. I mean, a lot of people like to say, no, we can't look back in the past and so on. But I mean, I do think that he's always worked incredibly hard and gone under the radar and earned the right to be the starting goalkeeper at Real Madrid. But, you know, he's very different to Courtois. And Zidane, I think, has always really liked Keylor Navas. And he's always opted for him as his main goalkeeper. But now, you know, things have changed, and who knows what's going on upstairs in the boardroom. And if there's pressure coming from there to say, no, Courtois needs to be the number one, and so on. So I do think it is a little bit harsh the way that they've treated Keylor Navas and sending him off to PSG. Or at least the way that his time at Real Madrid, I think it could have been done in a much better way. But in terms of Areola, well, again, he knows exactly what he's stepping into. He knows he's going to be the second string goalkeeper, and he's going to be playing most of the time, or really rather sitting on the bench most of the time, let's say. But you're right. He's coming back to La Liga. He is fresh off of winning a World Cup. So he's obviously a very talented man between the sticks. And you know, he played for Villarreal a few seasons back. I think it was the 2015-16 season. He, I think, only conceded around 32 goals in 37 games. So, I mean, he is a good option as a number two, and he seems willing to fill that role at Real Madrid. Obviously, Real Madrid is a huge club, as we know, probably the best in the history of European football, at the very least. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he does get any time at all, or what competitions he might play in. Maybe he'll get the Copa del Rey. We'll see how it works out. But he is only on a loan deal for 1 year. So we'll see if that changes by the time the season ends, if he impresses enough, or if Real Madrid are interested in hiring his services for longer, or if they'll be sending him back to Paris. But you never know. I mean, it could work out well for him.
True. Let's keep the focus on Real Madrid, because not only did they pick up many different players, including Alphonse Areola, in this summer window, they seem to have picked up the injury bug as well.
Yes.
Luka Jovic out, James Rodriguez out, Eden Hazard out, Marco Asensio out, Isco's out. I believe Militao has not even played a match yet for Real Madrid. What's going on there that all of a sudden they've got this rash of injuries to pretty much every position on the team?
You're right. It's been crazy for them. I think in the first 50 days or so of the season, they had 10 injuries, seven of which were muscular. So that means that there's something going wrong with the way that they're training. Maybe they're training a little bit too hard. They're not resting their bodies enough, or depending on what it is or how they're training as well could be affecting the fact that they are picking up these specific types of injuries. Something is obviously not going well over there for them. And you're right. They've signed five players for something like 300 million euros this summer. The biggest one, the marquee one, being Eden Hazard. He hasn't even touched a ball yet. None of the new players have really had any minutes, very few minutes overall. But the good news is that Hazard should be ready to go by match day four, which is, of course, this coming weekend. And I know that Madridistas are very excited for him to finally get some minutes in a Real Madrid shirt. But they do have that concern, and they've had more injuries than any other team across the entire league thus far. And it's not exactly the best way to kickstart your campaign. And the way that it's we've seen the impact, let's say, on Zidane's choices is the fact that we've seen squads that, with the exception of Courtois, are exactly the same as squad you would see in 2014 or 2015. He's sticking to the old guard, partly by choice and partly because he doesn't really have many alternatives because so many people are out, and so he can only go available to him. The good news is that it seems that just about everybody is fit and ready to go. So he should have just about everybody to choose from for this match day coming up around the corner. And they do have really difficult matches coming up in September as well. They have Sevilla at the Sanchez Pizjuan, which is always a difficult place to go, especially for the big boys. And they also have the Madrid derby as well. So at least if there were a time to have players injured, at least maybe it was better that it happened during the preseason and not now, because they've already dropped points. They haven't lost a game yet, but they have drawn twice and they are trailing a bit on the table. So they can't really afford too many more missteps this early on.
Samra, before I go into my question, I do want to send a message that I got here from WhatsApp from Stel Siliano, who actually did a great interview with with Samra. If people haven't heard it, he sends his hello and best wishes.
Well, hello and best wishes back to him as well.
So continuing on the injury bug, I mean, it's not just Real Madrid that's been affected as well at the start of the La Liga season. It's their big rivals, Barcelona. You know, we have a lot of injuries, and the big one, obviously, coming in with Lionel Messi, who missed out on the beginning of the start of the season for Barcelona as well. But, you know, you're looking at injuries for Luis Suarez, you're looking at Nelson Semedo, you know, you're looking at Ousmane Dembele and you know, Samuel Umtiti. You're looking at a few injuries that have affected Barcelona so far, and it's paid huge with this team. You know, starting off three games, one win, one draw, one loss, you know, 4 points, and currently in eighth place so far in the La Liga season. And, you know, with a big of important games coming up, you know, they have Valencia in the league, and then they'll play Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League. Is there still this cause of concern for this Barcelona side heading into these games, or is this just something that eventually will perhaps be resolved as we go into the later half of the season?
Well, I'm sure you know by now that Barcelona fans are incredibly difficult to please. As are Madrid fans as well, has to be said. I do think there's a lot of concern. I think people are overreacting a little bit and people are not very happy with Valverde, with some of his choices. But again, he, like Zidane, to be fair, as you said, has had a lot of... He has been giving chances to younger players, giving chances to players who are coming up through the youth squad as well, to give them minutes. And he's had to adapt to his circumstances. And obviously, people are very excited to see Messi get his first minutes, Leo Suarez as well, Luis Suarez as well. But the good news is that both of them should be ready to go as well this weekend. As you said, they have Valencia coming up right around the corner, and that's a huge, hugely important match for them and a difficult one always. And, you know, let's not forget, preseason is difficult for a lot of these clubs because of so many travel plans that they have. They're flying all over the world. in Barcelona's case. I can't remember exactly where they were. I think a week before the league started, they were either, I think it was China or it was in the US. It was somewhere on the opposite side of the world, let's say. And they come straight in to starting the league at San Mamés, which is another very challenging place for clubs to go to and teams to go to. And they looked tired. And so it was a huge advantage to Athletic Club, who went to win that game. But we didn't see the best version of Barcelona straight away. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they had tired legs and they had injuries. So I think it will sort itself out eventually. It always tends to do so, especially with clubs like Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid or Barcelona. We even saw the same last season, where these clubs didn't exactly start off on the greatest foot. So I think, yeah, it will calm down over time, over the coming weeks, over the coming months. But they do have the Champions League as well. I think in Barcelona's case, which we'll talk about, they have the most difficult group of all of them. So out of the three teams, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, you know, it's going to be tough work for them. But with Messi coming back, that should help. With Suarez coming back, that should help too. Antoine Griezmann has been playing really well in their absence. It will be interesting to see what happens when they do come back and how he's going to fit into the squad and what his role is actually going to be. They do need to get a bit better and tighten up in defense, which has been a problem, a point of contention over the last few seasons in general. But they do have their work cut out for them. We saw the cracks as well against Osasuna, going 2-0 down. I mean, they were able to fight back and get a draw. But the fact that they had to rely on young players coming off the bench to do so speaks volumes to the road ahead and the work that they have for them to do.
No, absolutely. Definitely. Just heading into, you know, you mentioned the Champions League. We'll get to that in a second, but we will stick to Barcelona as well, because one of the big talking points that happened in this international break was the news from, I think it was from El País, that talked about the possibility of Messi essentially deciding his future on January 1st, that he could indeed leave Barcelona. But, you know, it's gone through so many rumors now that, I think I was watching a report, I think it was on BN Sports, you know, he might, even teams in MLS are interested in having his disposal. And how big would that be to see someone like Lionel Messi play in the United States? But having said that, you know, by the time his optional renewal comes, he'll be, I believe, 35, if I'm not mistaken, 34 by the time that comes about. What do you think is next? I mean, you know, this is a weird situation, because, you know, we've seen this with Xavi, we've seen this with Andres Iniesta, the same two players who essentially had that kind of clause in deciding their future. Both of them eventually went to different countries. Xavi went to Qatar, whereas Andres Iniesta is in Japan. What will be the case for Messi, do you believe? You know, do you believe that, you know, a player that has essentially started his career at Barcelona since the age of 13 eventually retires at the club, given the cult legend status that he comes? Or do you feel that, you know, given the dream that he's always talked about of finishing his career at Newell's Old Boys in Argentina, or trying a different challenge at, you know, what is really, unfortunately, the twilight of his career? I mean, what do you believe is going to happen to Lionel Messi heading into the new decade?
Well, you kind of already took it right out of my mouth. I was going to say, go back to Argentina. I think that I would put my money on him going back there. He has a very different profile to players like Xavi or Iniesta in terms of his personality, right? He's a family man. He's very much rooted to his identity here in Barcelona, but also to his identity back home in Argentina. You know, he got married there. He still has family there. He plays for the Argentinian national team. I mean, he identifies very much with being Argentinian. So, and like you said, he has going home and playing out his twilight years or over there, where things really got started for him. So that would be my guess. I would say that he will play out his entire career, let's say the best part of his career, his best years here with Barcelona. I don't think fans need to fret just yet. I don't think he's going to leave anytime soon. You're right, he does have a clause, according to El País, that says that he can choose to leave at the end of each and every season if he wants to. And he's already had, I think, 8 contract extensions so far. The last one was back in 2017, and his current contract goes through until 2021. So apparently, you know, word on the street is that he has chosen not to extend his contract anymore. So that means that he would see out this current one until 2021, and then we'll see what happens. My guess is he'll do that. He'll stay. He's been living in Barcelona since he was 14 years old. He's established roots here, and I think it's a sense of stability for him as well, for his family, for his kids. I don't see him with desire to uproot any of that and make those kinds of changes anytime soon until he's really ready and says, okay, you know what, I'm ready to hang up my boots. I feel like I've done absolutely everything I possibly can, and I'm ready to go home and play in Argentina just for a bit of fun at this point.
So I just, I was going to say, I'm sorry, I just wanted to jump in here real quick, because for me, the idea of Messi moving from Barcelona is really foreign. I mean, he is Barcelona. You know what I mean? It's not, it's almost unimaginable. But again, I go back to my Juventus roots, and I say to myself, what about Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo pairing up at Juventus for a year or two?
Oh. I mean, but I don't think it'll ever.
Hey, a man can hope, right? I can hope.
Sure.
So you really think that he would ever leave Barcelona? I mean, there was talk that he would have a lifetime contract coming up.
Again, I think that's more symbolic. I mean, that's what it was for Iniesta as well. And it was ultimately Iniesta's choice to leave when he was good and ready to do so. So, again, I think, you know, there's quite a few other players at Barcelona that have that kind of contract. And I think it's more symbolic than anything else. And I agree. I can't imagine Messi playing anywhere else, especially in Europe, that isn't Barcelona. So I think the only option for him really is to leave the entire continent and go somewhere else. And I think he would go home. I think he'd go to Argentina. I can't picture him going to the MLS or going to Japan or going to China. I just don't see it happening. I think he's way too tied to his family, his roots. And I think he's always wanted to have that experience of playing as an adult, you know, where he's from. So for me, that's my prediction.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you there, because, you know, you know about the story of Lionel Messi, you know, the fact that he went through everything to make it as a professional and to be in that kind of situation where he essentially had to leave his entire family to go to a different country where, in a way, I think ever since he actually joined the national team, now going into almost 15 years playing for Argentina, you kind of have to worry about how he really isn't that appreciated, because, you know, there are some roots and, you know, there is that comparison, obviously, with Maradona of trying to win that World Cup and be this ultra extravagant player that could score countless amount of goals and win countless amount of titles at club level, but do nothing at an international level. But I think and seeing a lot of interviews as well in the past of him, how much he's connected to News Old Boys, the fact that he wants to go back and to finish his career, maybe playing the Libertadores or do something to some extent, you know, try to finish off his wonderful, wonderful career in his own country. So that would completely make sense as well.
Yeah.
So heading into now the Champions League, as you mentioned, you know, we're really into some interesting group for the Spanish teams. I mean, you know, looking into, in order, we have Real Madrid taking on PSG, Club Brugge, and Galatasaray in Group A. We have Atletico Madrid, Juventus, Bayer Leverkusen, and Lokomotiv Moscow in Group D. We have Valencia in Chelsea, Ajax, and Lille in Group H. And I think for me, and I think for a lot of us here, in probably the group of death, it's Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, Inter Milan, and Slavia Prague. I mean, Samra, this is a really tasty four groups for all the Spanish teams. I mean, what's your evaluation of all the teams, and how do you think they all will fare heading into them, possibly heading into the round 16?
No, I agree. I think Group F, Barcelona's group, is definitely the most challenging out of all of them. And if I had to rank the four groups in order from most difficult to, let's say, easiest, I would say Barcelona's is the hardest. I would say Real Madrid's and Atletico Madrid's is just about even. And I would say Valencia have the easiest, let's say. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I just think it's going to be a slightly easier for them than the other teams. And I think that's down to the fact that Chelsea has a new manager in Frank Lampard with not a whole lot of experience. It's a very young team. They're making a lot of changes right now. It's a transitional period for the Blues. Ajax, they've lost two of their best players in De Jong, who went to Barcelona, and De Ligt, who have gone to Sevilla. So it's still going to be a strong, very strong team, but I don't think it's going to be, they'll be able to pull off quite a row as they did last season. So I think that Valencia have a very good shot of getting out of the group. As for, let's say, Real Madrid, I mean, I think it's really juicy, obviously, them going up against PSG. Of course, the Neymar, Mbappe rumors, will they, won't they? It certainly makes for an interesting storyline. And these are two of the biggest betting clubs in the planet. So I think it'll be an interesting matchup for them as well. But I don't think you can underestimate Club Brugge or even Galatasaray, but I still think Real Madrid should get out of their group relatively comfortably. As for Atletico Madrid, I know this is one that you guys are particularly excited about, let's say, because of the Juventus matchup. And I know that I would bet they are looking for a bit of revenge. And obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo's going to be hungry to build on what he's already done, to the punishment he's already delivered to Atletico Madrid. I think it's a bit of a rematch, isn't it, that one? And I think everyone's going to be quite excited to see if Atletico Madrid can take them down this time around. And Bayer Leverkusen, obviously going to be a bit of a tough contender as well, and Spanish teams don't typically fare too well in Germany. It tends to be a difficult country, difficult place for them to go to, and obviously Atletico Madrid having to travel to Russia in the dead of winter, for any team that's not quite used to that coming from Southern Europe, that's going to be very difficult going up against Lokomotiv. And then Barcelona. So they've got Borussia Dortmund, which obviously is a great team. And they have Paco Alcácer, who's a former Barcelona man, in their squad. So that should be quite an interesting matchup. And then you have Conte's new project at Inter Milan, trying to rebuild a great historic team that has always been brilliant in the past. So also taking into account the fact that Barcelona don't really do very well against Italian teams in Italy. So it's going to be a really interesting group stage, I think, all around. And I think we're in for a bit of surprises. I don't think you can really write off any of the smaller sides. So I do think, though, all four of the Spanish teams should get out with relative ease, let's say.
I was going to say, and we really get the excitement right off of match day one, because they open at the Wanda Metropolitano with Atleti versus Juve. So we're going to get that excitement right off the bat. And I think I agree with you. It's going to be a great Champions League season for us, especially in the group stages. So
I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be brilliant.
It is, absolutely. I want to close with one final question. I know normally we would ask you, especially this early in the season, your prediction for who would win La Liga and who would win the Pichichi. And I know everyone will give us the same three answers. It'll either be, Barca, Real, or Atleti. You know, that's kind of the status quo. And as far as the Pichichi goes, it's always going to be Messi, 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 and then maybe somebody else. I want to know about the outsiders. You know, we saw, I believe it was Granada last season, was it? Am I thinking of the right team that's kind of stuck their nose in the Champions League race? I don't know why it's escaping me right now. It wasn't Granada. It was
Getafe.
Getafe. Thank you. It was Getafe. I knew that. Exactly. But there was a team that kind of stuck their nose in the race a little bit, an unknown or an outsider.
It was Alaves for about the first half of the season until January.
That's right.
They were top four.
Yep.
So Getafe held their own all the way until the end. It was very impressive.
It was the last match day. So is there a team that you see this season that could possibly stick their nose into this title race this year? I didn't want to make it an easy question.
I'm going to be really honest with you. I actually think this is going to be Atletico Madrid's year.
Ooh.
I think that I think they're going to take it this year.
I'm thinking about that as well. And, you know, with a player like Joao Felix, my God, he's been sensational.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you think he's going to have that much of an effect where he can really turn that around? I mean, the kid is a wonderful talent. He's incredible to watch. But, I mean, to unseat, you know, Leo Messi and his Barcelona, you think that he's capable?
I do, but not just because of him. I think overall, from front to back, they are an incredibly solid years. I mean, they're incredibly tight at the back. Mm-hmm. I think they've only conceded maybe 2 goals so far. They're the only team in the league that hasn't lost a game. They've won all 3 games. And the last time that they did that, the last time they won their first 3 opening matches on the bounce was 2014. And if you guys remember what happened in 2014?
Yeah,
yes, we do.
Won it. Yeah, so there's certain the opportunity, and with Barca and
there is
Real,
promise.
Oh, sure. And, well, with Barca and Real getting off to quote unquote slow starts, I mean, exactly. The door is certainly wide open. How about the Pichichi?
It is open. Oh, yeah. And I think also that Real Madrid and Barcelona have, let's say, a bit more special attention on trying to win the Champions League. Real Madrid, because it's always a priority for them. Mm-hmm. They obviously have the most European Cups than anybody else. So that is always a priority for them to win, although the league is very important for them. And I think now with Zidane there, that's also a goal, a personal objective for him is to do well in the league, because they haven't. And Barcelona, you know, even Messi said they haven't won since 2015. It's a thorn in their side. They want to win the competition again. So I think that could give slight advantage to Atletico Madrid. And like I said, I mean, they're off to a brilliant start.
Agreed.
So, they look exciting. I would throw in maybe Sevilla as a dark horse. I don't think they'll win the title, but they also look like they have the potential for a lot of damage this season.
Certainly. And the Pichichi, definitely Messi, or is there an outsider that you would peg? I mean, you look at you would want to pick Antoine Griezmann, and I'm sure he's going to take some goals from Messi, but I think the argument would also go likewise the other way, where Messi would take goals away from Griezmann being on the same team. So is there somebody that could beat Lionel Messi for the Pichichi this year?
I think it would be not a good idea to bet against Messi.
I agree.
I think he's still got it. So I'm going to give him at least another year or two to finish Pichichi. And then find some in the middle. But I would say, no, I think he's going to take it again. I think it's really difficult to bet against him, quite honestly.
I completely agree. Summer, I want to thank you for joining us on the show tonight. We had an absolutely wonderful time, and we both look forward to speaking with you again very, very soon.
Oh, a pleasure. Really, really been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on, and I'm looking forward to the next time as well.
Summer Hunter from La Liga TV. That was a fantastic interview that we got the opportunity to speak with her, and some great insight into La Liga, especially the pick of Atleti to win La Liga this year. That's something that I was not expecting to hear, so... it's certainly going to be an exciting season leading up. Rob, let's get into some of the other things we wanted to talk about. Let's head over to Europe first, because obviously the Euro qualifiers are in full swing. In my opening monologue, I did mention the big. I guess, do you want to call it an upset, Rob? Where Germany is beaten by the Netherlands 4-3, if I remember the final score being. I'm sorry, 4-2, with Germany leading in the match, but the Netherlands coming and scoring 4 goals in the second half on this one to take this decision. You know, it really, you know, it kind of sends Germany for a little bit of a loop. Germany is in control right now with 12 points in Group C, but they're tied with Northern Ireland. The Netherlands are at 9 points, but have only played 4 matches, not the 5 that the other two have played. So this is a very, very tight race, Rob, going into the final matches of this group, don't you think?
Definitely. And I think, when you kind of think about it as well, Joe, I mean, Germany haven't exactly been on full swings ever since the World Cup, really. Mm. You know, they've gone through some losses. This one, as big as it may be, against a bitter rival. And at home, I think they played at Hamburg Stadium. But
that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's an upset, but definitely not expected, given the fact that they were in cruise control, if you saw, within the first 2 goals. But something clicked in, and it worked well for the Dutch to get those 4 goals in.
Yeah, you know, looking at the Dutch, is this the rise of the newest or the latest and greatest version?
Absolutely, 100%, 100%.
I agree, too. Let me ask you a follow-up question to that, then. Can this Dutch team, as constructed, do some damage, whether it be in the Euro or the World Cup?
100%. Okay. I think they have a really bright talent with one of the best young defenders in the world, the best defender in the world, and a lot of bright talents up front.
Can they win it?
No.
No?
They could go very far, but I don't think they're going to win it.
Okay.
It will be tough. It'll be tough.
What teams do you see in their way?
I mean, you know, Spain, France, Portugal, mm-hmm. Italy, even Germany to them as well.
The usual suspects, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, even look, I mean, the Dutch, although their group certainly not nearly as difficult as some of the others, Group I, leading the way. They've won all six matches, 18 points. They've only conceded one goal. So that's, you know, that's certainly the sign of a strong team. But again, Russia in second place there at 15 points. And then Kazakhstan's in third with 7 points. They're pretty much on their way to the tournament, both teams, I would say. Looking at some of the other groups quickly, obviously England leading the way, but certainly not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. They're on 9 points. They're a perfect 3-for-3. Kosovo, Czech Republic soon following after. But those teams have played 4 matches where England's only played 3. So obviously a game at hand, plus leading the way, you would say, think that they could get through. Ukraine and Portugal right now leading Group B. Portugal's only played 3 matches, though, in this qualifying round, Rob, where the others have played 4 and 5, and Portugal holding second place. So I would say Cristiano Ronaldo and company is certainly in good shape there. We just discussed Group C, very tight. Germany, Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland actually losing today to Germany 2-0. So that sets them back a little bit. The Dutch, with the game at hand, could draw level on points. Belarus and Estonia pretty much are out. Group D, Ireland leading the way with Denmark and Switzerland. That's a tight race as well. Switzerland have a game at hand on them. Ireland have 11 points. Denmark, 9. The Swiss have 8 points. So that one can be tight as well. And then poor Gibraltar gets beat up in that particular group. Croatia, right now, leading the way on 10 points. Slovakia and Hungary right on their tail at 9 points each, Rob. So I think, you know, we could see the World Cup finalists eliminated from this tournament, you know, with a couple of strong showings. Wales right there at 6 points as well with a game at hand. So that is completely tight, that Group B. Spain, Sweden, Romania round out Group F. Spain leading the way, 18 points. They're perfect, 6 wins. And Sweden on 11 points, Romania on 10 points. That's still all to be said. Norway there as well in fourth and nine with 9 points. Poland, Group G, leading Group G, 13 points. Slovenia on 10 points. Austria on 10. That is all through 6 matches. Poland seemed to be in the driver's seat there, even though coming off of a 0-0 draw to Austria just on the weekend. France, currently tied on points, Rob, with Turkey and Iceland, 12 points each. That's going to be interesting going forward. France's only loss in this so far has come to Turkey 2-0 in Turkey, in Istanbul. So that's something that's going to bear watching, because I think, you know, when I ask you about the Dutch team, you're asking about, you know, what other teams could beat them. You've got to favor the French side, right? I mean, what do you think, Rob? You know, would they be the favorites? Obviously, World Cup champions, yes. Young team.
I think they're the big favorites at the moment, yeah. Given the fact that they're riding off a World Cup win. I think they're the big favorites to do something at the Euros.
Sure.
Easily, yeah. with the amount of debt that they have as well.
Yeah, and we also said that was a young team going into the last World Cup, and here they are, you know, won the World Cup and gained a year experience, so I would say that as well. But obviously struggling a little bit with Turkey and Iceland trying to get out of this group. Belgium, like we said, Belgium and Russia pretty much in the driver's seat in Group I. Italy in the driver's seat in Group J, again, perfect 6-0. They defeating Finland on the weekend as well. Finland in second place, 3 points ahead of Armenia. Bosnia, kind of a disappointing fourth spot in here, Rob, 7 points. They really need to get it turned around, or else they're not going to end up at the Euros themselves. So one more. You've got the next round of qualifying coming up. I believe there are matches tomorrow. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rob. I'm sorry. We are done with qualifying for this month. We do have Euro qualifying coming back in October. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I apologize. We have qualifying matches tomorrow. England, Kosovo, France, Andorra. We've got a couple of matches tomorrow. Then we come back on October 10th. So that's the Euro roundup real quick. The last thing I want to talk about, Rob, tonight is, and it'll lead back into our trivia question, is the U.S. men's 3-0 loss to Mexico in a friendly over the on Friday. I'm going to let you give your thoughts first, because you know my thoughts pretty much, but I'm going to let you go first on this one.
I mean, what's there to say? I mean, I saw a team, and I see a player like Christian Pulisic that is just miles ahead of everyone else.
Mm-hmm. I think
out of all the team, out of all the players that played for the U.S. that day, I think Pulisic, it just shows how much big and different Pulisic is compared to the other players. And
I'm glad you brought up Pulisic, because Pulisic, after the match, and I want to find the comment here, said, "We still play with fear against them, and that is what I can't really live with. That needs to change." Was criticized by Ali Moreno from ESPN for saying that. And he was questioning Pulisic's leadership qualities for making those statements. Do you feel that Moreno is right in questioning Pulisic? Do you feel Pulisic was either right or wrong in his comments?
No, because he has every right to be angry. Mm-hmm. I think when you realize that you're maybe the hope of the entire national team, one of the biggest hopes. He captained the team last night, right? Or that night, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. Let me go back and look, but I'm almost positive that he did captain the side.
In either way, by all means, he's trying to be outspoken. That's great as a captain for him doing such a thing, because that's something that, you know, you have to take no bull for an answer and just go with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are tired, and, you know, people don't want to lose to their big rivals, especially on their home pitch.
No.
For them, it's an embarrassment, and they don't want to do it, especially 3 goals. But at the same time, you know, I think he has every right to be mad. Every single right.
I agree. Some of the player ratings that we can go over for that match: Zach Steffen was a 3, Reggie Cannon 4.5, Walker Zimmerman 5, Aaron Long 3, Serginho Dest 5, Will Trapp 3, Alfredo Morales 4.5, Weston McKennie 4, Tyler Boyd 5, Christian Pulisic 4.5. Jesse Zardes 5.5, Greg Berhalter 3. This is according to MLS.com. Greg Seltzer writing this. You know, this is the, I guess, the final point that I want to make on this is the Greg Berhalter part. He wants to, and he's admitted this. He wants to put out a team or play almost in a Barcelona type style, right, Rob? Where he wants to play tiki taka, lots of passing, lots of possession. For me, when he puts Jesse Zardes out there, he's not a possession guy, okay? You know, Alfredo Morales, not necessarily a possession guy. Will Trapp, for me, not a possession guy, okay? Even guys in the center like Zimmerman and Aaron Long, not real possession guys for me. So how do you put a team out there that's not capable of possessing and ask them to possess, right? And this and this is where you have to question them, because if you're going to put this type of team out there that's looking to possess the ball, you know, pass back and forth, lots of quick passing, you know, almost tiki taka ish, right? But you've got guys out there with lead feet. I mean, you know, granted, they play with heart, they play with hustle, their positioning's not terrible. You know, it's not the greatest, but it's not terrible. But they don't have the feet that you're looking for. So you would have to think that Greg Berhalter's got to go back to the drawing board and say, listen, the players, the talent that we have on this U.S. men's national team in 2019 is not capable of playing tiki-taka. You know, we can play something else. We can play counter. They certainly can play counter. They've got plenty of speed. They've got Tyler Boyd, who's pretty quick. Pulisic is definitely quick. You know, Weston McKennie is a pretty quick player. Tyler Adams, when he's on the pitch, is a pretty quick player. You know, DeAndre Yedlin, quick, another fast one. So you've got speed. You can play, you know, defend and counter. And I think that would have served them better against Mexico, the way, you know, instead of coughing the ball up deep in your own territory, because you don't have guys that have feet. So at this point, you know, Greg Berhalter can't come to the podium after the match and say everything's fine, because then you become the dog in the burning building. Okay? You literally personify him. The building is burning around you, and here you are going, nah, everything's okay. No, it's not okay, dude. And you've got to change what you are doing. If you don't change what you're doing, you're going to get that same product tomorrow night against Uruguay. You're going to get that same product in World Cup qualifying. And God forbid you do that, because I feel like, Rob, a Panamanian side could easily overtake them. And Honduran side could easily overtake them. We already saw what Mexico can do, right? And there was no Carlos Vela out there. And you saw Chucky Lozano come out in the second half, right? So he wasn't there the whole time. It was one-way traffic. So I think there needs to be a change there. If Berhalter's going to keep his job, he better change what he's doing when he puts his team on the pitch. If he doesn't change what he puts on the pitch, then you have to start pointing fingers at the Federation again. And then we're back down the same path, I guess, right? That's where we lose it again. So, but again, Uruguay tomorrow night, I believe the match is at 8:30, Rob. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's the time of the match. I'm going to go look that up quickly, because I know we do have some matches of the week here, and I know I didn't list I didn't list that particular match. I'm going to go effort it right now while we're talking. And I'll give you the other matches of the week coming up that we're going to specify, because the leagues get back to work coming up this weekend. So on Saturday at 10 a.m., Man United versus Leicester in the Premier League at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday. PSG Strasbourg at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday. Leipzig Bayern Munich, probably the match of the week. If that one's not your fancying as match of the week, the next one is Barcelona Valencia Saturday 3 p.m. And then Saturday night, the Philadelphia Union versus LAFC, two of the leaders in their respective conferences, go at it as well. On Sunday, Serie A comes back with Genoa Atalanta at 6:30 a.m. Certainly going to be a good one to watch as well. So you want to keep an eye out for that match. Rob, for some reason, I can't seem to get to my I've got it here now. So the U.S. match tomorrow night against Uruguay will be at 8 p.m. So keep an eye out for that as well. We'll add that one to the list also. Back to the trivia question. And I gave it to you earlier. Last time the U.S. beat Mexico in an important match, meaning not in a friendly but in a meaningful match. If you can give me the date, the location, and the score. Rob, why don't you give me the score? That one's the easy one, right?
2-0.
2-0, of course. Where was that game match played?
Columbus.
And when?
2013.
September.
March 2013.
September. September 10th.
September. That was the game that U.S. Last time they made it to the World Cup, they played that game, and that was the game that put them into the World Cup.
Exactly. 2-0 in front of 25,000 people in Columbus, defeating Mexico. Since then, overall, Rob, they've only defeated Mexico twice. Once, another 2-0 result in San Antonio, Texas, on April of 2015, and a 1-0 victory at Nissan Stadium in Nashville on September 11th, 2018. Other than that, since that World Cup qualifier, 2-2 draw, then Mexico 3-2 in the CONCACAF Cup, 2-1 to Mexico in a World Cup qualifier, 1-1 draw in a World Cup qualifier, 1-0 in the Gold Cup final just this year, and just the other night, 3-0 in the friendly. And we'll see the next matchup if it brings anything better. So there's your trivia question for the evening. So without anything left on the list, Rob, I'll hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So, for episode 253 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Surma Hunter for helping us kick off year 7. Next week, we'll recap the Euro qualifying. We'll also look at the Champions League as they get ready to start the Champions League group stages. So, for episode 253 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
And I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.